KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley, San Francisco.
DuBois Triangle, Lower Haight.
Visitation Valley.
Downtown San Francisco.
Coming up, how Uber, Lyft, and driverless cars could change the shape of our streets.
There's increased demand from car share, from bike share, from the on-demand couriers and Postmates and Caviar, as well as the logistics and goods movement from Amazon, FedEx, and UPS.
Curb wars. And we'll hear the story behind this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound.
I wanted to show them something, like another dish within the Vietnamese cuisine that they might not have tried.
That's coming up today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. This week, we're bringing you a three-part series on the fight for the future of the parking space. This is Curb Wars.
Curb Wars.
Today, part three, the future of the curb. 9 years ago, there was no such thing as Uber or Lyft. Taxis were around, of course, but they only made up around 1% of vehicle trips in San Francisco. Fast forward to now, and ride-hailing companies make up around 15% of all trips within the city. That's an estimated 170,000 rides per day. Suddenly, the curb is in high demand for passenger drop-offs. And that's led to a question. Should the city give Lyft and Uber drivers more space to unload their passengers? KALW's transportation reporter Eli Wertschafter has the story.
We are at the intersection of 16th Street and Valencia Street in the Mission District.
I'm with Brian Wiedenmeyer, director of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. Night is falling. Kids are coming home from school, grown-ups are coming home from work, and the bars on Valencia are starting to fill up.
A lot of people want to come here to shop, to have a drink, meet their friends, and one of the ways they do that is via Uber and Lyft.
Valencia is one of the city's busiest destinations for ride-hailing. Because it has a bike lane, it's also a popular biking route. Every couple minutes, we see another car with an Uber or Lyft sticker pull over into the bike lane. This time, it's a large silver Honda.
Here we go. They're picking these people up who are crossing the street.
Three passengers jaywalk across Valencia. They pop open the trunk and load in a couple bags. Then they open the doors on both sides of the car and get in. Every biker going by has to swerve into traffic to avoid them.
There were maybe a dozen people that biked by, three parents with children on the backs of their bikes, who were then forced out into the auto travel lane where you've got cars traveling in excess of 25 miles per hour.
Valencia had one of the city's first painted bike lanes, but now the street is a hot spot for bike injuries. We don't know how many of those come from ride hailing, but the SFPD reported that last spring, Lyft and Uber drivers were responsible for two-thirds of traffic violations downtown. Two-thirds! No one, not the city, not the bike coalition, foresaw how fast ride-hailing would take over.
The uses of those streets and what's happening on them are changing a lot faster than the city, I think, had anticipated, and we've been caught unprepared.
The late Mayor Ed Lee had a problem. Here were two incredibly successful local companies, Uber and Lyft. They were part of the tech boom he helped encourage. But they also crowded city streets with cars doing dangerous things.
The mayor was kind of caught between those two issues, wanting to support businesses that are employing San Franciscans, and on the other hand, really dealing with the negative consequences to safety and congestion that those companies were also creating.
So in May 2017, Mayor Lee's office reached out to Lyft and Uber. He proposed a pilot program that would give the companies something they wanted, more access to the curb. Debs Schrimmer was Lyft's point person for those talks.
Today, the majority of our curb space is being given away for parking, which doesn't necessarily create a space for other modes of transportation to have access to the curb.
Mayor Lee said the city could create more zones for Lyft, Uber, or any other vehicle to safely load and unload passengers. The companies in the city would decide together where to put those loading zones. And in the process, the city would get a piece of something they had wanted for a long time. data about where Uber and Lyft rides were happening.
We have really great information about trip demand and our ridership information.
So Lee's office met with people from Lyft and Uber, and they narrowed down a list of streets to try out the pilot. Then, in December, Mayor Lee died of a heart attack. The talks are still going under Mayor Mark Farrell, but they lost some momentum.
There's a lot of things happening in the city right now, and we are still working on moving forward with this pilot program, but recognize that the city has many issues that are more pressing right now.
But Brian Wiedenmeyer with the Bike Coalition says Lyft and Uber could improve safety now without waiting to get more curb space.
They have the ability. They've had the ability to work within their own apps for years now to institute practices like geofencing.
The idea he's talking about, geofencing, is like a virtual fence. Basically, the app can tell drivers to do pickups or drop-offs outside of a certain zone.
A preset pickup location can really help speed up the transaction of a driver and a passenger finding each other and then accessing the curb and pulling out and freeing up space for another transaction to happen.
Supervisors Hillary Ronan and Jeff Sheehy have asked Lyft and Uber to put a geofence around Valencia so that drivers have to use side streets instead. Deb Schrimmer from Lyft says geofencing works in some cases. They already do it to control drop-offs at the Caltrain station. But she says Valencia just needs more and better loading zones.
Rideshare isn't the only service that is causing complications in the bike lane for people who ride down Valencia Street.
Schrimmer says other services are also using up more and more curb space, not just ride hailing.
There's increased demand from car share, from bike share, from the on-demand couriers, the TaskRabbits, and Postmates, and Caviar, as well as the logistics and goods movement from Amazon, FedEx, and UPS.
And if you think it's bad now, experts think that another new technology could make the curb even more active. Driverless vehicles. Dropping off a package or a person could be much cheaper if you don't have to pay a driver. Susan Shaheen, a transportation researcher at UC Berkeley, says if that happens,
the demand for that curb space access is going to grow by orders of magnitude from what we see today.
Founders of both Lyft and Uber have proposed a future where most people stop owning private cars. Instead, they want us to get around using a cheaper, driverless version of Lyft or Uber. That's a scenario where cars might not need to park as often. So in theory, we could dedicate much more space for pickups and drop-offs. But Shaheen says we should think twice before we remove all that parking, especially if people do have their own driverless cars.
Because where are these automated vehicles going to go? It would almost force them to be in constant motion.
Basically, if we don't provide enough parking, autonomous cars could end up just roaming the streets in some kind of robo-car gridlock hell.
So ultimately, we're still going to need some parking, and we're certainly going to need curb space access.
Shaheen says we should think carefully about who gets to shape the future of the curb, because the companies that dominate today may not have the solutions for a future we still barely understand. She says if we're not careful,
the market leaders potentially create an environment in which new companies can't gain access to that curb space, those innovations that we haven't even thought of yet.
Meanwhile, as politicians and corporations jockey for influence over the future of the curb, people who use it every day are still caught in the battle for space. Like Vinicius Moraes. He's a Lyft driver.
Thanks for picking me up.
Yeah, no problem.
Great.
Moraes came to San Francisco from Brazil 11 years ago. And throughout his time in the city, he's delivered just about everything. Pizza, packages, people. He wishes there was more space in the city for drop-offs.
What would you think about that? Would that be an improvement?
It would be awesome because, like, you know, it's going to avoid a lot of more drivers to park and double park.
Like a lot of rideshare drivers, Moraes says he once got a ticket for pulling over illegally. In this case, in a bus lane that he thought was poorly signed.
And it took us, like, probably 10 seconds. I got a $150 ticket. Yeah, that's not fun.
Moraes drives me back to Valencia Street, where cars, bikes, parklets, and Uber drivers are all vying for a piece of the curb. And Moraes says, yes, it is an especially hard street to drop off customers.
we can pull over here and you can get out safe.
He pulls out of traffic and into a little alleyway. Technically, we're blocking it, but no one's coming, so whatever.
You hadn't scheduled an interview, so I appreciate you talking
to
me.
No problem. Good day. Anytime. All right. Okay. Have a wonderful
day. Good to meet you. You too. Have a good day.
I gave him 5 stars. On Valencia, I'm Eli Wirtschafter for Cross Currents.
Eli is our transportation reporter. You can reach him at transportation@klw.org. You can find the rest of our Curb Wars series at our website, klw.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
I wanted to show them something, like another dish within the Vietnamese cuisine that they might not have tried.
Oh. When you migrate to a new country, everything seems strange at the beginning. And at that time, we didn't have a lot of Asian food.
Grilled sausage spring rolls, steaming soups, and sugarcane drinks. The Grand Century Mall Food Court in San Jose has the foods and the feeling of a home preserved in a collective memory. The mall is a cultural and commercial center for San Jose's more than 140,000 Vietnamese. Audio Academy fellow Christine Nguyen explained why people drive for hours through Bay Area traffic to eat, drink, and just hang out.
I've moved 16 times, so when I settled in San Jose, I thought, finally, now I can get some real Vietnamese food. But where to go? A friend brought me to the Grand Century Mall food court in East San Jose.
Oh, hello, vegetarian lover, hopai.
We caught up over Meng Xiao. It had been years since I'd torn through this sizzling crepe of coconut cream and rice flour batter. Shrimp, slivers of pork, mint, and bean sprouts spilled out the lacy edges of a golden crisp semicircle. It tasted like home.
When you migrate to a new country, everything seems strange at the beginning. And at that time, we didn't have a lot of Asian food or shopping mall.
Emily Nguyen is eating with a friend at one of the laminate tables. She's in her 40s and came to San Jose as a teenager.
That's one of the main reasons why they built this mall, so for us to continue that tradition and pass it down to our children so then the younger generation can learn about the culture.
Emily easily navigates between her native and adopted cultures. But Hung just immigrated a year ago. She says eating at the Grand Century Mall makes her feel less lost. She says she's homesick. At the mall, she sees lots of other Vietnamese. They're familiar to her. And she can find dishes from her hometown here. I meet a group of well-dressed 20-somethings. Philip and his friends are visiting from New York, and their orange trays are piled with plates of fresh herbs and greens, bowls of dipping sauce, meng xiao, and a bowl of beef pho.
I wanted to show them something, like another dish within the Vietnamese cuisine that they might not have tried, especially in New York, it's harder to find.
I can hear distinctive regional Vietnamese accents as well as other languages.
I want a small one, yeah.
A group of Buddhist nuns with shaved heads and brown robes check out the merchandise at a cell phone and phone accessory shop. Then, with beatific smiles, they walk across the mall's pink terrazzo tiles to order sugarcane drinks. At the end of the hall, the Eurasia Delight snack shop carries everything from Belgian cookies to beef jerky. Rows of bins, dozens of different kinds. There's also dried seafood, stacks of sausages wrapped in banana leaves, and jars of candied and pickled fruits. Once you look interested, the women at the store will insist that you try a sample.
Honey, why are you buying stuff again?
We thought we'd pick up some Vietnamese supplies. for my wife at the market nearby, and some delicious pâté, and stop in for a quick bite.
Shoppers stop for a meal after buying some snacks, dragon fruit or giant pomelos for an ancestor altar. Each restaurant is a pretty bare-bones operation with the owner on side and a few employees. Like traditional Vietnamese street food, each vendor specializes in one or a few dishes. That's how you know they'll be good at what they make.
I'm going to offer all the food because I love food.
Quý is here with his wife. They're from Pittsburgh, California, and make the trip to San Jose every few weeks to get a hit of someone else's home cooking.
And for Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh? I'm surprised Quý drives all the way from Pittsburgh in traffic just to do errands.
Tôi đang ăn cái món miếng vịt.
Yeah. So miếng vịt is like a skinny glass noodle with duck, right?
Good.
He likes that he can eat glass noodles with roast duck one day, ginger chicken the next, and if he feels like it, a bowl of porridge. He says it's convenient because after a long drive, he doesn't have to move his car again. But there's probably more to it. I think he and his wife find comfort being around familiar people, food, and sounds. Yuki Din sits at another table. She's slender, glamorous, and meticulously dressed. Every part the cosmopolitan San Franciscan. She's delicately plucking at a plate of blood sausage and organ meat while blowing gently on a spoon of rice porridge.
I order is called cháo lòng dò heo. This is kind of porridge and it's come with something like intestine thing. And it's a little bit strange for Western people, but for us, it's like very tasty.
That's awful. Like spleen, stomach, liver, and tongue. I've never tried it. I was, however, excited to find bún thang, a northern dish you don't typically find in restaurants. It's a light, delicate soup with an herbal flavor, and it's sometimes called medicine soup. I definitely feel healthier after every bowl. Here, the spicy, complicated dishes of Central Vietnam, the clear flavors of the North, and the sweet, savory intensity of the South comfortably rub shoulders.
So, of course, like each region or even small areas of each region, they have their specialty dishes.
Can you recommend one restaurant here? If you could eat only one, which one would you recommend?
Oh, that's so tough.
I grew up eating Vietnamese food, but mostly pho, and I've never experienced all of this. So it's an awesome experience.
Now, if you're a true Vietnamese gourmand, you might not be impressed with the food here. It's a mall food court, after all. It's not as good as Mom's, but seriously, how could that be possible?
Is the bánh bèo here good?
Not really.
I asked a woman from Canada if the food was better here at the mall or back home in Vancouver.
Món ăn Việt Nam ở Vancouver thế nào?
I think he's better.
You know, it's not just locals that come to the food court. People from all over the Bay Area and beyond go out of their way to come here. Even Vietnamese who spent most of their lives in the U.S. want to be part of a community bonded by a love of food and communal eating. Philip says the Grand Century Mall reminds him of childhood memories and trips to Vietnam.
I mean, I remember when they broke ground and it was such a fun place to be. I love sugarcane drinks and this spot here is really good. I remember visiting Vietnam and you could get sugarcane drinks like on the side of the streets and they would just give it to you in like a Ziploc bag with a straw and then they put a little kumquat in it. So it makes me think of that.
Outside the food court, beside a fountain and the mall's peach-colored McMansion-esque entry, groups of men cluster around cafe tables with the odd glass of beer and packs of cigarettes.
This table, all of them are my friends. That's why I take the seat right here to talk. Maybe from maybe at 10 until 2 p.m. until 3 p.m. You know why? Because all of us are old and retired now. We have nothing to do. It's a lot of fun to come here.
Every day, Mr. Nhạc Trần sits here in the shadow of a statue of Trần Hưng Đạo, a 13th century military hero who defended Vietnam from three Mongol invasions.
I have been here on more than 25 years.
Was it very exciting when they opened this mall?
You look outside, a lot of people come here to enjoy, to kill time, and meet the people to talk.
One man wears a maroon Army Ranger beret, another an FBI hat. Another man is younger, maybe in his 50s. He's muscular and in fatigues, and they all look like regulars. But no one wanted to talk to me except for Mr. Chen.
Take tea, take a coffee, they sit and talk together.
I ask him if he's here to play cards with friends. No games, he insists. They just sit and talk. There's a lot to discuss.
We have a lot of things to talk about the past, about the future of the children, a lot of things.
For Mr. Chen and his fellow veterans, the Grand Century Mall is not about the food. For them, the mall means that the Vietnamese people are here to stay. That even if they lost the war, they positively shaped the nation, even an expatriate nation. Mr. Chen told me all about the first Vietnamese general in the U.S. Army, bragging like the man was his relative. For him, every Vietnamese who succeeds in American business, education, law, or medicine is an example of how our people have persisted. Like most expats, these men remember the fall of Saigon as the day we lost our homeland. For a long time, they dreamed of taking it back. And over the years, those dreams have changed from taking Vietnam back to going back one last time. But for now, they sit here at the Grand Century Mall, nursing a drink or a snack and soaking up a little bit of home. For Cross Currents, I'm Christine Nguyen in San Jose.
Thanks, Christine. Well, we have no winners for this week, but we still want to know, where do you think Audiograph should record next? Give us a call, leave us a message. The number is 415-264-7106. Again, that's 415-264-7106. And that's our show. Today's Cross Currents team includes Angela Johnston, Nina Gensler-Debs, Truth Nguyen, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Andrew Stelzer, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Jackie Sajiko, and Gabe Graben. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley-Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. Có con đường nằm nghe nắng mưa Em ra đi nơi này vẫn thế Lá vẫn xanh trên con đường nhỏ Vườn xưa vẫn có tiếng mẹ ru còn nhớ hay em đã quên nhớ đường dài qua cầu lại nối nhớ những con kinh